Well, hello and welcome to another installment of Casual Trekker. This is Scott. This is going to be my movie review of Oppenheimer. And I must say, going in, I'm like, this is a period piece. This is going to either be a... You're going to shit the bed with it, or there's going to be bits and pieces that are shit. And once you put them all together, you get three-fourths of the movie with bits and pieces that are actually great, and the rest are kind of like, eh, movie you'd never watch again, but you'd talk about it if someone brought it up with you just casually. Fortunately, that was not the case, because you got to remember also, they had this thing where they were talking from two different perspectives. They had the black and white version, and going back and forth, and feeling like it was going to be kind of like Memento, which is another good movie, by the way. But the back and forth storytelling, you kind of... it's not done right. Like, if it's done right, like Quantico Season 1, then it narratively goes forward and it flows. And you can understand everything from different points in time and how it influences the other parts of the story. So this movie, very easy to understand. A lot of information, a lot of character. And in the last 30 minutes... it's just a wham, bam, bam, thank you, ma'am. Going back between both hearings, because that's basically how this is told. It's not told in the moment of going forward. It's told historically from two different hearings. So you'll be in the hearing, and they will ask him a question. He'll start talking, and then the answer, we will go flashback to when that answer was happening and see it. But it's not happening like A to B, B to C. You're in a X, you're an XYZ hearing talking about ABC, and you're gradually coming up to the current, and then you end up being in the future when he's older. I thought it was really well done. Really good movie. And I had no idea going in about one aspect of it, which not a lot of people are going to care about, but me being a fan, a really into that particular topic, was like, what? They just, what? So I'm going to say it. So spoiler, you don't want to hear it. Turn off right now. Okay. So I'm really big into the JFK assassination. I've read like 10 to 11 to 12 books on it in the nonfiction. I even read Stephen King's fiction, 11/22/63, saw the miniseries. I've seen all the specials on JFK. That's the one thing in history that I know a lot about. So when they brought up that Kennedy and Lyndon Baines Johnson and Herbert Humphreys, but they only mentioned Kennedy, I had to go truth check that immediately once I left the theater. But those three people voting against him lost him his appointmentship to the office that he was trying to go to. And then I'm like, oh, wait a tick. This man just set up Oppenheimer. Like, this movie should have just been called Roadmap JFK, because he set somebody up. He was pulling the strings, being a puppeteer, working in the background, and then all of a sudden you have Kennedy being assassinated in Dallas in 1963. Was that Nolan's thinking, or was it just a simple fact? Could it be a coincidence that someone that voted against this man embarrassed him on a national global level? Because everyone watches politics from across the world to see what's going on. So that was a global national embarrassment, that humiliation that Louis Strauss got. So I'm like, since he did what he did with Oppenheimer, could he have done the same thing to Kennedy by setting that into motion? And that's why it's so confusing, is because the pieces of the puzzle don't fit together nicely. Because when you look at the JFK assassination from an objectified perspective rather than, like, you know, biased, then the things don't add up. If you change the names, if you change John F. Kennedy to Leon Walker and you change Lee Harvey Oswald to Frank Bellman, and you change it from Dallas, Texas to Detroit, and you change it from Super Suppository to any random thing, just shooting some random person, and then what evidentiary stuff you would do and how you would look into it, they become completely different. It's a matter of perspective when you talk about that, about the JFK assassination, because the investigation was at no means done in any capacity correctly. I mean, you have people who were calling all of the evidence open and close, shut case the day of the assassination with no investigation done. So when that little bit of information came out that one of the men that went against him during his not thing was Kennedy, then come to find out in reality it was Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, and then you're like, well, both of those men were inside of a motorcade being shot at, and he already set up Oppenheimer. How much of a stretch is it to think that he might not have been involved because of that humiliation? Now, he was being a puppeteer, hardcore. And this is not that long after that. Kennedy had yet to be, had yet had, was, I'm not sure if he was a, if because he was a, he went, he ran into politics in 1960. So it was like just 3 or 4 years. And when you're planning revenge and you're trying to set something up, it could take a little bit of time to get the person you want in your crosshairs. So, who knows? They just put that little nugget in there to be like, question mark, asterisk. But that piece aside, there was one scene in particular, which people were talking about, I think, in, like, it was unnecessary, it just didn't do anything for the movie. I thought the scene with his wife sitting on the couch and him being interrogated and her only able to see him having sex with the girl, I thought that spoke a lot to her mindset. Like, it's like in any TV show and movie when the person says, anytime I look at the living room, I see you with her. That's exactly what they mean. They're seeing the moment. And of course, Oppenheimer's not really having sex with a girl. That's all in the imagination. But we're being able to look inside her mind of what she's seeing at the moment it's happening, which I think helps underscore her character. It wasn't unnecessary. It wasn't just there because, I mean, the characters don't know that they're in a movie, so why would they be covered up in the first place? It just, would it make sense for them to be naked? Is it in her character to be lounging around naked? And they're basically in a room, and they've been with each other, so, I mean, it's not that far outside of the realm of that being the thing. I would have to, if I were to score this movie, I would say it's a 8.5. If I ignore the artistic things that they did, and by artistic I mean little cutaway things that don't really make sense with what's happening, you like don't know why it's there. It's like a random visual that doesn't partake into what's happening. It's kind of like takes you out just a little bit. But those are very small, very minute, very little itty bitty things. The character struggle between the Matt Damon's character and Cillian Murphy, and then his wife, and the relationship between Oppenheimer and his mistress, and then trying to change the narratives in both of the hearings, set them up. We got to see how it all got to play out, what things were pulled. There was nothing left to question that would have been necessary to make a personal opinion on an event. Granted, this movie is not like, you know, a documentary. There's going to be things switched around and changed a little bit. No different than, say, Remember the Titans, when the football player was in the car accident, and then all the people were playing the big game in support of him, and he watched it on his TV set, when in reality, he was in the big game, and his accident happened after the fact. But because of dramatic purposes, they switched those things around. It doesn't change the reality The thing, it just changes the character's reasoning for what they were doing. So I think that's probably what they did here. The things that they changed probably didn't change the overall narrative. Instead of, like, for instance, having a conversation outside on a condo, they had a conversation in a library. Instead of having a conversation with another girl about something, you had a conversation with the wife or the girlfriend. You just take a bunch of characters and you combine them into one, so your story doesn't get confusing with too many people in the kitchen when you're trying to tell a story. Every movie does that for the most part. Erin Brockovich is an example of that. She had like 6 or 7 boyfriends. Certain ones did certain things and then it amalgamated into one character. But I gotta give this movie a very strong, very powerful 8.5 or 9. If you haven't seen it, you should. It's really, really, really good. I was worried about it being a slow burn and taking forever to get to the point. And you almost didn't need the atomic death thing. You almost didn't need that part because you were curious to what was going to go on with these characters. But I'll probably add more to this as time goes on. That's just my first preliminary impression of the movie. So watch this space. Thanks for listening. That will conclude this portion of the podcast.